This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. Our final installment in 2025 as we get you ready for the college football playoff quarterfinals, a couple of bowl games on New Year's Eve, as well as a few games on the 2nd of January. As always, please continue to rate, review, and subscribe. Every episode of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast is up on YouTube as well as we inch closer to 1,000 subscribers on our YouTube page. So continue to hit that subscribe button there on YouTube. We'll hear from Wes Reynolds a little bit later on in the podcast. Wes is in transit to the Rose Bowl as he cheers on his beloved Indiana Hoosiers in their first Rose Bowl since 1967. Matt Eumanns and myself talked to him Monday night on VSiN Primetime. And speaking of Matt Eumanns, he joins us now with a lovely background. Where's that background? Or is that a live picture? Are you back in Hawaii, Matt?
Tim, I'm joining you live from Tahiti this morning. No, I'm kidding. Thinking about it. You know, you can catch a flight from Hawaii to Tahiti, and it's only like 2 or 3 hours. You might want to think about that on your next trip.
What?
Yep.
Ooh. Hmm. Didn't think about that. Well, I am wearing my Kahala Hawaiian shirt to give a little shout out to you, Matt. You went out to the island and you brought us home a victory on Christmas Eve. So before we dive into the games, give us a quick recap of the scene for the Sheridan Hawaii Bowl and the true meaning of Christmas, which is there's nothing worse than hope. We gave up hope and sure enough, good things happened.
You know, it was a great game after a slow start. I was frustrated by the way Hawaii opened in the first quarter and a half, really not running a hurry-up offense, a little bit too lackadaisical, falls behind 21-0, and then finally gets it going. And I thought the atmosphere was outstanding. It was a packed house. And it was a great night to be out there. The wind was not a factor. You know, we kept talking about, this is a pretty good lesson about the steam in the betting market, because you and I kept talking about, why is this total dropping? And the total in the Cal-Hawaii game got as high as 55.5, dropped as low as 50. I bet it 3 times. I bet it 54.5, I think. I bet it again at 52.5, and then again at 50.5. And Tim, I wasn't concerned about it dropping because I felt like that was a game that should have been played in the 80s. If Hawaii did not get off 70s or 80s, if Hawaii did not get off to such a slow start, I believe that game should have been much higher scoring. And ends up being 35-31. We get 66 points in the game after that slow start. So don't be afraid of steam in the market if you really believe in a bet. And I think that's another lesson to come out of there. The wind was never really a factor at all. And I'm still not sure why the total was dropping like it did. But I know there are groups in the market to bet numbers. And, hey, a lot of times their numbers are going to be wrong. And that was the case in that game. I thought it was an outstanding performance by Hawaii to come back and win that game. It was also a bit of a choke job by Cal to blow that 21-0 lead and to give up that game-winning touchdown. Tim, I'm sure you saw the play. I don't know how many times you replayed it, but the safety who should have picked off that last pass by Luke Weaver in the end zone, he should have picked it off. But when he was backpedaling, he stumbled and he lost a step, and that allowed Nick Senecal to make the game-winning touchdown catch. Pretty wild how that whole thing unfolded, but it was definitely worth the trip. I was only out there for about 2 days, but that's not the first Hawaii Bowl I've been to. I love that game on Christmas Eve, and it was a great experience to go out there again. Always makes a trip better when you win the bet, too. Much better.
Yeah. Yeah, made our trip to start the year that much better with the game-winning field goal against Stanford, bookending the year with a win over an ACC team from the Bay Area, 35-31, and Hawaii 9-4 season for our guy Timmy Chang. Micah Alejado announced he's coming back next year, so hopefully great things for our beloved Bows, the official team of the podcast, if you will. And just a reminder, our guy Kansei Matsuzawa, unfortunately, he won't be back. He's going to be taking his time talents to the NFL. Finishes up the year 27 of 29, the Lou Groza Award finalist, consensus All-American. And there's some great gear out there. You've seen the kicks, you've felt the energy, and now's the time to wear it with official Tokyo Toe gear. Inspired by the Lou Groza finalist Kansei Matsuzawa, from bold tees to clean hoodies, every piece brings that same focus and drive Kansei shows on the field. So show your pride, show your passion, and represent the best nickname in college football this year. TokyoToe.com. That's TokyoToe. .com. Gear up and own the moment. And also just a special shout out to our friends at Rainbow Authentics for being part of this podcast all year long, Matt. So fun event for you to go out there and way to bring home a win. I believe 3-0 straight up in ATS for you, right? For our Bows this year on the island.
Yeah, the Hawaii trips have all been winners. Hopefully you could keep that trend going again next year. And we'll see what we come up with for football season next year. If we can take VSIN prime time on the road, you know, you've got Hawaii at Stanford, you've got Notre Dame at Wisconsin. Tim, we have all sorts of options.
Yeah, we're gonna have a big offseason planning things up, but we're not there yet. So let's dive into the biggest games of the championship quarterfinals.
The main course.
That's right. We call them the main course. You'll be popping champagne on New Year's Eve, is sitting back watching Miami take on Ohio State, a rematch of a thrilling national championship game that took place January 3rd, 2003, when Miami was an 11.5-point favorite and Ohio State got the controversial pass interference that went their way in the first overtime. They again go on to win in double overtime, 31-24. A little bit different this time around, Matt. Ohio State's the defending national champion. They're number two. They're 9.5-point favorites. This game will kick off at 7:30 Eastern on ESPN New Year's Eve. Total around 41.5 in this game. What do you make of the first of four quarterfinals of the college football playoff?
Yeah, these playoff games are really going to be good. And Ohio State's got the number one scoring defense in college football, 8.2 points a game. And I think this Miami offense is going to have a lot of problems here. I'm tempted to bet this game under the total of 41.5. Mark Fletcher rushed for 172 yards in the game against Texas A&M and in the first round. But if the Buckeyes defense neutralizes Fletcher, can Carson Beck pick up the slack? Can he move the offense through the air? And I don't have a lot of confidence in that, considering Beck's performance against Texas A&M was uninspiring, to say the least. I think this Ohio State offense has been a little bit disappointing. But obviously, there's some recency bias there coming off that 10-point performance against Indiana in the Big Ten championship game. I have not seen the big plays out of Julian Sand in this offense I think a lot of us expected to see. I've said this many times. I don't like the coach-quarterback combination of Mario Cristobal and Carson Beck. But I think this Miami defense is legit. Is strong enough to keep this game close. Who knows, Tim? Maybe the best bet here might be under 41.5. I am tempted to play that, but I was over at the Westgate Superbook about a week ago, and I looked up, and Miami was a 10-point dog, and I said, well, I've got to play this. 10, I made the number in this game 7.5. I said, I gotta play 10. Get up out of my seat, take two steps, and the number drops to 9.5. And I've missed it. 10 has resurfaced a couple of times, and I've missed it both times. It has not been up there for long. I think 10's going to resurface again. But if it doesn't, I'll just buy the half point if I need to. And the reason is, if I take 9.5 and this game lands on 10, it's going to annoy me for a long time. And I was going to take 10. So I'm taking Miami plus 10 at minus 125 if I have to do that. But I'm waiting for that 10 to resurface, because I think the Hurricanes could be live here with a shot to win this game. And it should be ugly, low scoring. And I've not been as high on the Buckeyes as most people have all season.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the 10. I was sitting watching, I think it was Sunday Night Football, and I looked down and I'm like, Circa's at 10. I think they're the only place at 10. Now, I laid a little juice with it, minus 20, but I agree. I think game day this will resurface at 10. I think you'll get a pretty strong public support on Ohio State. I agree, though, Matt, with you on the under. So I played first half under. If you want to lay juice at FanDuel, it's minus 32, under 21.5. For the official play, it'll be under 20.5, since that's what you can get across the market. So if you want to pay that juice and get the under 21.5, look, these two teams, Matt, are really slow. Now, the caveat and the curiosity I have is that Ryan Day now taking over play calling for Brian Hartline. He is still going to be on staff, but of course he is headed down to South Florida to be the head coach. So does that change things up? Do we see some more shots from this Ohio State offense? But you know, I think something that you brought up, and it's worth repeating, is Ohio State, the two best defenses they've faced this year, week one, Texas, Big Ten championship, Indiana. They scored 10 points in the Big Ten championship, and they scored 14 points in week one. Also, I think both these teams' special teams have a lot to be desired. You look at Miami, how poor their kicking was. Granted, very windy down there in College Station in the first round, and I just don't know what to expect from Miami offensively. We had college football handicapper Brad Powers on VSiN Primetime Monday night, Matt, and he liked Miami's team total under in this game, which I can't really disagree with all that much. But you look at the defense that this Miami team brought to the table against Texas A&M, 7 sacks, 9 tackles for loss. Reuben Bain was an absolute menace in that game. He had 3 sacks, Matt. So I think you're going to see a lot of pressure in this game from Miami. And I think the return of Keontae Scott cannot be overstated. He was phenomenal in his return. Nickel for Miami really made his presence felt in that game. So I think these are two really big time defenses. When you look at the metrics, both are top 5 defensively here. You know, what do we get from Bo Jackson? Bo Jackson has really kind of emerged here lately for Ohio State. 4+ 100 yard rushing games, I believe, since the start of November. So 6 of the last games, he's gone for over 100 yards. Official play for me is going to be first half under in this one, Matt. I think it's a feeling out process, and I'm not going to be surprised if it's 10-3 going into halftime or 14-3, something like that. But I do have a little bit of worry. I do have a small piece on Miami plus 10. I think that does return, but I do have a bit of a worry. Can this offense have success against a defense like Ohio State?
And you should be worried about that after watching Carson Beck against Texas A&M, right? And I think that's a legit concern. But you know, before that, Beck had really been playing well. If you go back, I talked about his numbers before, prior to the Texas A&M game. He had actually been putting up some pretty good numbers. So I don't want to overreact to what happened at A&M. But again, that Miami defense forced 3 turnovers in that game, held A&M to 89 rushing yards. I don't think this is a game where the Buckeyes are going to run away and hide and win big. That's why I like taking the 10 with the Hurricanes.
Yeah, one last note on this one. You know, as we get to fewer football games, you're going to be looking at different ways to attack the market, and there's going to be more opportunities in these games. Books are going to start showing more player props. Max Clair, the transfer from Purdue, Matt, he's been solid this year. Nothing crazy numerically, but I think he's a guy that you could see be targeted. I think over-under at FanDuel is 30.5 receiving yards. I could see him getting involved in this game. He's a difference maker. There's going to be a lot of attention for Miami and Corey Heatherman and this defense on Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate. Max Clair's a stud, and I think he's a guy that certainly can make a big presence felt. So that'll probably be a bet that I'll add on game day when those player prop markets start to become available a little bit more. But I think Max Clair for Ohio State could be a guy that you see targeted a bunch for Julian Sain, especially if the pressure's coming. We know how much pressure Miami can bring, and there's nothing better than a nice big tight end as your safety valve. So Max Clair is a guy that I probably will put a little, you know, play on some player props for Ohio State in this game on New Year's Eve, man.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised that the Buckeyes have not used the tight end Max Clair a little bit more this season. But like you said, it's going to be a bit different offense we're going to see here with Ryan Day calling the plays instead of Brian Hartline. And maybe the Buckeyes will pick up the pace and use the tight end a little bit more here.
All right, let's get to New Year's Day, Matt. Three games on New Year's Day, and we'll go in chronological order. All these games will be on ESPN, Oregon, and Texas Tech. Shout out to our colleague, Stormy Bonantoni. She'll be on the sidelines for this one, along with Katie George, Joe Tessitore, and Jesse Palmer. We'll have the broadcast of this one, Matt. Oregon right now, a 2.5-point favorite. Some of those 2.5s are juiced. Could we see a 3? Show up on this game at some point. Total sitting at 51.5 for the Red Raiders against the Ducks, noon Eastern, down in Miami.
Yeah, this is a game that's really a difficult handicap for me. Should you be a little bit concerned about the Ducks defense allowing so many points to James Madison, or you just say, hey, well, Oregon had a big lead, kind of let off the gas, and that's what happens in those sort of situations. I want to see Dante Moore in the playoffs step up and play like a superstar, play like a guy who should be a top five pick in the NFL draft. I've got a bet on the Ducks 8-1 to win the whole thing, but this is a game that's concerned me. When I made that bet, I said, I don't know if Oregon can get by the second round with Tech. If the Ducks can get over this hurdle, I'm pretty confident they can go the whole way, but Tech is so strong in the offensive and defensive fronts. And I think that's where they might have an advantage here. That might put Oregon in a little bit of trouble. Like you said, I've got a bet on Oregon to win the whole thing, so I don't have a bet on this game. Chris the Bear Felica in the Friday night contest at Circuit came in on Oregon here, which surprised me a little bit. I think Brad Powers on the show with you and I on Monday night mentioned he liked Oregon a little bit, and he questioned Texas Tech's schedule. I don't have a strong opinion here, Tim. What do you think?
Yep. Yeah, the schedule strength is an interesting discussion, and I know Brad references it a lot. Sagarin, when you look at his strength of schedule rankings, has Texas Tech 68th, Oregon 14th. Now, it is worth noting, Matt, Texas Tech is massively overachieved this year based off of the betting market. They're the best cover team in college football, 12-1 straight up, 12-1 ATS, the lone loss coming against Arizona State when they didn't have their starting quarterback. They have won all 12 games by 20 or more points. They have been absolutely dominant. But once again, going back to the question of the strength of schedule, how much does the strength of schedule weigh into there? Defense is elite. You mentioned up front. How about David Bailey, the transfer from Stanford? Totally worth the money. 13.5 sacks leading the nation. And Jacob Rodriguez is everywhere. This dude is an absolute beast. 117 tackles, 4 picks, 7 forced fumbles this year. And Brett Ciancia put this out in his Pick 6 Plus preview of the game, Oregon versus top 25 defenses, Matt, this year. So that would be against Indiana, Iowa, Washington, and Wisconsin. They average just 21 points per game, 4.4 yards per play, and 340 yards per game. But you saw it against James Madison, and I know it's JMU, but they have the explosivity, right? 9 plays in that game that went for more than 20 yards. They have a total of 100 plays this year that have gone for 20-plus yards this season. And I think the biggest thing in this game, Matt, to your point about Dante Moore, can he be that superstar? Can he be the number one overall pick? Right now, he's around plus 250 or so to be the number one overall pick right now in betting markets. With DeCorian Moore back, with Gary Bryant Jr. back, can you see this wide receiver core take advantage of a secondary that I think is okay, but I don't think it's elite? I think Texas Tech up front is elite. So I think that's the battle to see in this game. And that lastly on this one, Matt, Texas Tech forcing turnovers. They and Indiana have the best turnover margin in college football this year. Both are plus 17. And can Texas Tech force turnovers? I do like Oregon a little bit. Like you, I do have a future play on them. I bet them to make the championship at 3-1. So I am not going to bet this game. Of the four, this one intrigues me the most. Probably the one I have the least feel on. A lean towards Oregon. No play for me. Do have a future on this game. Or future on Oregon. When the bracket came out here. So a little bit towards Oregon, but no official play for me on this game. I think this game has the chance to be an absolute phenomenal game and maybe a good in-game betting opportunity. Matt, let me ask you this before we wrap up on this one. What quarterback do you trust more, Dante Moore or Baron Morton? And is that maybe the determining factor of how people should look to bet this game?
I really don't know. based on the evaluations of the NFL personnel people, you should trust Dante Moore, right? You're hearing he's in the running for being the number one overall pick. I've always, maybe I'm a little bit gun shy on that because I remember Dante Moore and how he played at UCLA in that 1 year under Chip Kelly, where he was a turnover machine. So I've never fully trusted him. He started to restore some of that faith this year. I think he's played pretty well for the most part. But I don't, that's the thing I said. I want to see Dante Moore step up and play like a superstar because I don't fully trust him to do that right now, but I think he's got that ability. So I want to see that in the playoffs.
By the way, Matt, are you excited to bet on Chip Kelly again? He's headed to Northwestern to be their offensive coordinator.
Is he really? Because there was there were reports that he was headed to North Carolina and that Bill Belichick was talking to him. And I thought, wow, a couple of dinosaurs on the same staff. Let's see how that works out. And be more than two dinosaurs on that staff. But Northwestern, man, that's an odd fit for Chip Kelly. You would think with all the money that guy's got, he could just retire and move to Tahiti. But I guess he doesn't want to. He wants to keep calling plays. He loves that first down run up the middle for 1 yard. We're going to see that a lot with Northwestern next season, so get prepared for that. Get excited about that next season. Tim, I just looked it up, by the way, because when I was in Honolulu at the airport, I asked a lady, I said, how long does it take to fly to Tahiti from here? Because I've always wanted to go there. She said, oh, it's only about 2 hours. I said, no kidding. I have to do that next time I'm out there. I just looked it up. It's over 5 hours. So she gave me bad information. While you were talking, about Texas, I just looked that up. It's 5+ hours. I might do it anyway. I've always wanted to go there. Yeah, Chip Kelly at Northwestern seems like an odd fit anyway.
Yeah. David Braun going from Zach Lujan, the wonder kid who was from the FCS ranks, to the grizzled vet in Chip Kelly. We'll talk more about that during the offseason. But let's get to the Rose Bowl, Matt. Indiana, Alabama, and we'll hear from Wes Reynolds in just a little bit. You know, he's all fired up to be headed out to the Rose Bowl. 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, excuse me. This will be the main crew, Chris Fowler, Kirk Herbstreit, Indiana right now. A 7-point favorite, total around 48 in this one. Matt, we are used to seeing just perfect conditions in Pasadena on New Year's Day when we're hungover, when people in the Midwest or wherever they may be, when it's a little cold, you see the beautiful sunset, the flyover. Apparently, we're going to see torrential downpours in Pasadena on New Year's Day. Indiana laying a touchdown against Alabama in the quarterfinal on New Year's Day.
Yeah, it's every time I've been to the Rose Bowl, it's been a sunny day. You know, it's been ideal weather. And you always, when you watch the Rose Bowl over growing up and over so many years, you always see the sunset over the San Gabriel Mountains, and it's like a postcard setting. That's not going to be the case when Wes Reynolds is out there this week. And I wonder, you know, how heavy is the rain going to be in this game? Because I don't think the Alabama offense is going to have much success against the Indiana D. And by the way, I talked about Ohio State being number one in scoring defense. Indiana's number two at 10.8 points a game, and Indiana held the Buckeyes to 10 points and pitched a scoreless second half in that Big Ten title game. And with the lack of a running game for the Crimson Tide, that's going to put a heavy burden on Ty Simpson, the Alabama quarterback. He's going to have to make some big plays through the air to move this offense. And, you know, you talked about Indiana and the turnover margin. The Hoosiers remind me a bit of the Chicago Bears. You know, when you watch the Bears, you're not always blown away by the stars or the big plays. But what they do is they're very fundamentally sound, especially defensively, and they produce a lot of turnovers. In fact, they produced one right off the bat in the first 15 seconds against the 49ers on Sunday night, and the Bears lead the NFL in turnover differential. And Indiana has been taking advantage of those turnovers, too. This defense is legit. It doesn't give up much. If you go back to Indiana's 30-20 win at Oregon in early October, the Ducks scored basically got 7 points off a pick six. They picked off Fernando Mendoza, ran it back, and Indiana regained momentum and pulled away to win that game. So Indiana allowed Oregon's offense only 13 points in that game, Tim. and held Ohio State to 10.
Yep.
How is Alabama going to put up much of a number here without a running attack to complement quarterback Ty Simpson? I just don't think the Hoosiers are going to give up much to the Crimson Tide here. And Fernando Mendoza, the Heisman winner, is surrounded by playmakers. You don't hear the hype for the Hoosiers playmakers like you do for Ohio State's guys around Julian Sand, but they've got them. They've got big play guys. Indiana held Ohio State to 58 rushing yards in that Big Ten championship game. Don't forget, this is an Alabama team that got completely shut down by Georgia in the SEC championship game and lost that 28-7. I like the Hoosiers here. I like them a lot. I think there's a potential they could win big. The heavy rain's probably going to keep the score down. I might take a look at the under, but I want to see the forecast a little bit closer to game time to see if that's going to materialize. But I'm waiting for this number to drop to 6.5. I know there's speculation we're going to see more Alabama money in the market closer to kickoff. So for the record, I'll just play Indiana -7. I think the Hoosiers win by double digits anyway, but I'm waiting for the 6. I'm going to play Indiana -235, which is the current circuit price on the money line. I'm also going to tie Indiana in with Georgia in a money line parlay as well. But I like the Hoosiers, and I think Kurt Cignetti is going to get the win at the Rose Bowl. Don't forget, he was on Nick Saban's first staff at Alabama in 2007. And when you watch Cignetti's team, when you watch how he coaches, you listen to how this guy talks, to me, he's a Nick Saban clone. And I don't think Cignetti's going to lose this game to Alabama.
Yeah, the unique ties of this game where Kalen DeBoer was the OC at Indiana when they had some success in that COVID year with Michael Penix. And as you mentioned, Kirk Cignetti was on Saban's staff down at Alabama before taking a Division II head coaching job at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. It's very fair to point out, how is Alabama going to run the football? They were held to -3 yards rushing against Georgia in the SEC championship game. Didn't really get much going. Had a couple of runs against Oklahoma thanks to Daniel Hill. Jam Miller, 7 carries for 11 yards against Oklahoma, Matt. They were held to just 260 yards of offense against Oklahoma. They had that big pick six, a terrible read by John Mateer. I loved it. Both you and I had Alabama in that game, and that really flipped the game on its head right before halftime there for Alabama. Question for me, Matt, is we have not seen Indiana since the freak postgame injury to Stephen Daly, a stud defensive end for Indiana. 5.5 sacks, led the Big Ten in tackles for loss. Maybe the presence isn't missed all that much in this game, but could it be missed in the semifinals or championship game? He was high-fiving fans and ended up hurting his, I think, ankle in that one. So a really unfortunate situation there for Indiana. This Indiana team, best cover margin in college football this year, averaging an 11.2 cover this season. They can run the football. They can throw the football, as we know, with Fernando Mendoza. I just want to mention a couple of these numbers because I think it's fair that you brought up, you know, they don't have maybe the sex appeal outside of Fernando Mendoza, who won the Heisman Trophy. You've got a running back tandem of Roman Hemby and Keelon Black, 918 yards rushing, 6 touchdowns, almost 800 yards for Black, and 7 touchdowns. So a combined 13 rushing touchdowns between the two of them. And then Omar Cooper, he was a little bit banged up in the Big Ten championship, Matt. He's fully healthy, as Pete Thamel reported earlier in the week. 58 catches, 804 yards, 11 touchdowns. We all remember the beautiful connection from Mendoza to Surratt in the Big Ten championship game. So I have not bet this game. I think I'll join you on that money line parlay because we'll get to Georgia here in just a moment. I really like Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. Last question I have, Matt, is Ryan Williams. You know, we've been asking this for a while. I mean, this was one of the air quotes superstars in the game heading into this season. One of the main reasons I really liked this Alabama team because of the two-man wide receiver core of Jeremy Bernard and Ryan Williams. Bernard's been great, 60 catches, 802 yards, 7 touchdowns. Ryan Williams in his last 5 games, 10 total receptions. He has 10 drops on the year as well. It has been a forgetful season for Ryan Williams in Alabama, for him at Alabama. So I think the rain really helps Indiana. If they make this an ugly game, you know, making Alabama try to run the ball, this is a very poor running attack. So no official play on this game, but I think I'll probably join you with a an Indiana-Georgia money line parlay. I think it's circa right now, Matt. You can get that for a little bit on plus money if you put together Indiana with Georgia.
Yeah, you can. If you play the 6-point teaser, let's just say you're going to bet $100. If you bet $100 on the 6-point teaser, you'd bring back, you know, $91, $92, something like that. If you play this on the money line, Georgia and Indiana at minus 235 each way, you get plus 103 on that bet. So that's a better way to play it. When you talk about Hemby, Cooper, Surratt, those guys are big-time players. I know Indiana players like to call themselves the misfits because a lot of these guys came from James Madison. But these are big-time players. Don't be fooled. And you're going to see that in this game. You said the rain should help Indiana. I would agree, but I don't even think Indiana needs to help. You know, I don't think the Hoosiers need to help here. This is not one of those title-caliber Alabama teams. I think it's just hard for a lot of people when you see Indiana and Alabama and you think about the history of these two teams and the reputation to say, wow, Indiana's a 7-point favorite over Alabama? This doesn't look right. But, hey, Kurt Cignetti is 24-2 the last 2 years. The two losses were true road games to Ohio State and Notre Dame last year. And guess what? The Buckeyes and Fighting Irish played for the national championship. Kurt Cignetti doesn't have any black eyes on this resume. This guy's legit, and I think the Hoosiers take care of business here. I'll be really, really surprised if Indiana does not win this game.
The final quarterfinal, Matt, is down in New Orleans. It is a rematch of a game we got on October 18th. Georgia taking on Ole Miss. Ole Miss dominant in their first round win over Tulane, winning that game 41-10. Georgia, the last time we saw them, dominant in the SEC championship, 28-7. It could have been worse against Alabama. Right now, point spread sits at 6.5 across the market. No real movement there in that number. Juice has moved a little bit, but haven't seen any sevens, haven't really seen any sixes, even though I think South Point does have a six right now on Georgia. Ole Miss and Georgia, total 55.5. Just for comparison's sake, Matt, back on October 18th in Athens, Georgia's 43-35 win, the spread was 7.5 and the total 56.5. So not a ton of movement from where this game was about 2.5 months ago.
Yeah, and I watched that entire game, and obviously Georgia was really lucky to cover that number. But this is going to be a different type of game. The Georgia defense is a lot better now than it was then. And you and I talked about this scenario where the Rebels are going to be playing with energy, fully focused, to show they can win without Lane Kiffin in that first-round playoff game against Tulane. And that's how they showed up and played. I thought the coaching staff did a great job getting Ole Miss prepared for that game. The players showed up, and they beat Tulane 41-10. Trinidad Chambliss and Kawan Lacey, who's a stud running back, helped the Rebels roll up 497 total yards in that game against the Green Wave. Now, this is going to be different because Kirby Smart has really improved this Georgia defense. I think the defense has dramatically improved from what we saw early in the season. If you think back to games like Tennessee, where Gunnar Stockton had to be heroic on the road to pull that out, this Georgia defense in the past four games has allowed an average of 7.3 points. And included in that was that victory over Alabama in the SEC title game we talked about. Gunnar Stockton, 7 TD passes, 1 pick total in late season victories over Alabama and Texas. And I think Bulldogs can run the ball here. You get pretty good play from Stockton and lean on their defense, and they get the win. I'm not as confident that Georgia's going to cover the number as I am that Indiana's going to cover against Alabama. I have a little bit more confidence in Indiana covering the number, but I think Georgia does take care of business here. It might not be easy the entire way, but again, I'm going to play Georgia laid. There's 6 at South Point right now. If you don't want to lay the 6.5, if you have access to the South Point Sportsbook, you can lay 6 with Georgia. And I'm going to play that money line parlay, Georgia, Indiana at plus 103, because I really like the way Kirby Smart's got this Georgia defense playing.
Yeah, you think about the difference of coaching in this one, and no knock on Pete Golding. This will be his second career game as a head coach, Matt. This will be Kirby Smart, if I could do the quick math, 138th. He's 117-20 as a head coach. Saw this number pointed out by our buddy Brett Ciancia. With 10-plus days of prep time, Kirby Smart 28-3. Since 2019. So I give a massive edge to Kirby Smart. And you also think about how these teams are playing. To your point, the two best games of the season by Georgia, November 15th against Texas, where they were absolutely dominant in the second half of that game, winning 35-10. And then the last time we saw them, their defense was completely suffocating against that Alabama offense. Alabama didn't have 100 yards in that game until the final play of the third quarter, a 28-7 win, which I think could have been worse. Ole Miss defensively, Matt, you think back to the game on October 18th, you said Georgia was a bit fortunate to get the win. I think that's a fair assessment.
Cover.
That all
fortunate,
being said,
fortunate to get the cover, Tim. Fortunate to get the cover, not the win.
Yeah. Eight possessions offensively, Matt, eight scores for Georgia to start the game. The only possession they didn't score was when they knelt down to close out the game. So Georgia's offense was rolling in that game. I expect them to be rolling again here. And they get Colby Young back, Matt. They have not had Colby Young since the Ole Miss game. And he's a difference maker. 23 catches, 336 yards this year. Zachariah Branch has been just amazing. The transfer from USC, 73 catches, 744 yards. He's dynamic in the kick return game as well. So, you know, I do think, too, when you think about Kirby Smart, Matt, this is a guy that is a master motivator. Last year, Georgia won the SEC championship and then played in the Sugar Bowl. They lost that game to Notre Dame 23-10. Now they're back in the Sugar Bowl. I think there's going to be a little extra reminder from Kirby Smart to his squad. Hey, we were here last year and we came up short. So I like Georgia. I am surprised the market hasn't moved a little bit. So that's a bit, you know, concerning, I guess, if you will. But I laid 6.5. It was my first bet that I made. I was hoping that Ole Miss would win big. They did. And I was happy to lay under a touchdown here with Georgia. So I laid the 6.5 here with Georgia. You know, the question, Matt, which I think is a fair one. You mentioned Kawan Lacy. He's an absolute beast. You could argue maybe behind Jeremiah Love, the second best running back in college football this year, over 1,300 rushing yards. He was held to just 31 yards on the ground against Georgia. Will he be able to get the ball rolling in this game? How vital is that for this offense to have Kawan Lacy to get things rolling here on the ground? I think it's essential for any success for Ole Miss. And he was nullified in that game back in October.
Yeah, he was, and that was a little bit surprising. As I said, I thought the Georgia offense was so good that day that Georgia was the better team, deserved to win. But as far as covering the number, I thought the Bulldogs were lucky to cover the number in that game. That's why I don't feel like it's going to be easy here, but I do like Georgia to eventually pull away and cover the number. Kirby Smart has done a great coaching job. You know, you watched the Georgia defense early in the season, you said, what the hell is happening here? Especially in that Tennessee game. But he's really solidified everything, and the Georgia defense looks great. You know, I would say about a month ago, not quite a month ago, I guess the playoff bracket was announced December 7th. That's a day that's going to go down in infamy for Tim Murray and Notre Dame backers. But I was trying to decide. I wanted to bet one team to win the college football playoff. I had Indiana 10-1 that I bet a couple months ago. I was trying to decide between Oregon and Georgia, and I ended up going with the Ducks at 8-1. But I think Georgia's a real threat to win the thing.
Yeah, I do too. And you talk about playing hot at the right time. And, you know, the Georgia Tech game was bizarre. That was a really poor performance by Georgia. Post-game win expectancy, I think they were 30 or 40%. So that one's still a little bit in my mind, but I'm going to push it to the side. I like Georgia here in this spot. I think they take care of business, and I'm going to give the edge. And, you know, I think it's worth noting, you know, you've got a staff that is partially working for LSU too. So, you know, how focused have they been for this game? We know the focus was there for Tulane, but now how focused will they be for this one? Drew Bobo is out again. That's a big loss for Georgia, their stud center. So he is not going to play in this game. So that's going to do it for the four quarterfinal games. We do have some other bowl games that we'll run through quickly here, Matt. And let's go to the ReliaQuest Bowl, formerly the Outback Bowl. This one, noon on New Year's Eve. We've got Iowa taking on Vanderbilt. I'm looking forward to this game. There's not really many opt-outs to note in this game. You've got the finale of Diego Pavia's illustrious and infamous, if you will, career. Hasn't had the best month or so based off of some off the field shenanigans. Got a total of 46.5 and a spread of 5.5. The Commodores laying 5.5 here against Iowa, noon on ESPN on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, shenanigans is a good word there for Diego Pavia. And who knows, Tim? Maybe he will sue the NCAA and come back for an eighth year or a ninth year. It feels like all these players who sue the NCAA just win. The NCAA doesn't want to fight this. And now we've got guys playing in the NBA, coming back to play college hoops. I mean, what the hell's going on? Diego Pavia, maybe we have not seen the last of him yet. Hopefully we have. But anyway, the Commodores are 10-2, and I've talked about this. How much better would this playoff have been if you had a 16-team bracket with no buys, seeded 1 through 16, where one plays 16, and the top 8 seeds have home field? You could have put Vanderbilt, Notre Dame, Texas, BYU in this playoff, and we would have had a much better 16-team playoff. But the Commodores were 10-2. They're two losses at Alabama and Texas, so now, this is a team that could easily be a playoff team. I think the disrespect that Diego Pavia showed to Fernando Mendoza after the Heisman ceremony was just a classless display. And hopefully karma comes back to bite him. I think he needs to be humbled. And guess what? The football gods serve up the Iowa defense for Diego Pavia, and I think that's fitting. Iowa likes to get it down and dirty, make it ugly, and I think that's what we're going to see here. Pavia was actually phenomenal in Vandy's last four games. He averaged 373 passing yards with 12 touchdowns and three picks in those four games, and he also had 368 yards rushing and four touchdowns. But, Tim, you're running up against Kirk Ferentz and an Iowa defense here that held Indiana to 20 points, that held Oregon to 18 points. And I think you're going to see a low-scoring, ugly type of game. I think this could be similar to the Missouri Vandy game. I'm taking Iowa plus 5.5 and think the Hawkeyes have a real shot to win this game.
Yeah, I'm with you. It'll be a common play. I took the points. I also played first half under 23.5 in this game. Iowa's offense, I put in my notes, it's bad and it's slow. So that helpful. Yes. That's helpful for a first half under. But yeah, to double down on your numbers with Indiana, Oregon, USC, throw them in there too. They held Indiana to 337 yards, Oregon to 373, USC to 360. This has been an Iowa defense that has faced some pretty good offenses this year. Vanderbilt, very good offense. And it's, you know, Diego Pavia has had a hell of a career, you know, starting in New Mexico State, where we kind of backed him as an underdog. And since he got to Vanderbilt, 18-6-1 against the spread. So he has a big one to close it out. Will Eli Stowers play? He's a legit tight end NFL prospect. I believe he's already announced he's headed to the Senior Bowl. 62 catches, 769 yards, and four touchdowns. Kirk Ferentz expects the full team to play. So I actually have two plays in this game, Matt. I'm going to go first half under 23.5, and I will also take the points with Iowa. Speaking of bowl games, Matt, I will be on the sidelines for the Vegas Bowl coming up on New Year's Eve, Utah and Wisconsin. And our friends over at Coca-Cola Bowl Season Radio have had play-by-play of over 15 games so far this bowl season. They've got two games on New Year's Eve, the Sun Bowl, Arizona State and Duke You could hear that on Sirius XM channel 201, the Vegas Bowl, Nebraska and Utah. Hear that on Sirius XM 202. They will also have the Armed Forces Bowl, Rice and Texas State on January 2nd. Hear that on Sirius XM 201 and the East-West Shrine Game on January 27th. So follow them on social media at Bowl Season Radio to find out where you can listen to all of their broadcasts. They're also on the Varsity app, which you can hear for free, the Varsity Network app. I was listening to that app walking around the Phoenix airport a couple days ago when I was delayed to fly back. So check out our friends over at Coca-Cola Bowl Season Radio. Two games on the 31st and another bowl game on the 2nd. Speaking of that Sun Bowl, Matt, it's a beautiful setting down there in El Paso. I love that stadium. 2 p.m. on CBS. Arizona State will be without Sam Levitt. And this is a game that the point spread has kind of bounced around a little bit. Duke is a 3.5-point favorite. I played a little Duke money line early on in the bowl season. Darian Mensah is going to play, which is big news there for Duke. Cooper Barcade is back for another season as well. Lean Duke, not going to be an official play. Any thoughts on Arizona State and Duke on New Year's Eve?
You're right about that. Sun Bowl's been one of my favorite bowls for a long time. I've been to it a couple times. I think Duke, you know, after what happened in the ACC, this game might be a little bit anticlimactic for the Blue Devils because I think they accomplished their goal a little bit. But I got to be honest, in the way I'm betting these bowl games has been different than in past years. I'm not pulling the trigger on a lot of these games because I think there are so many variables to handicap. It's a lot more unpredictable than it used to be. And you just don't know if teams are going to show up. Sometimes for these bowl games, if I knew Duke was going to show up and Duke really cared about winning this game, I would be betting the Blue Devils here. But I'm not really sure that's going to be the case. I don't know. So aside from the Hawaii Bowl and the Reliquest Bowl that we just talked about, I have not bet. I don't think I've bet any bowls outside the playoffs, just those two. And I did not play this. I may end up playing Duke here, but I need to read a little bit more about this game to see if the Blue Devils are really motivated to win it, if they're going to play it to win it, or what the deal is. What was your main reasoning here behind playing Duke? You said you played Duke on the money line?
Yeah, it was early on in the bowl season, Matt. I was trying to get the best of the number when Levitt announced he was hitting the transfer portal. Yeah. Then you had the thought that Mensah might be hitting the portal or heading to the NFL. So not in love with the game, but do lean Duke a little bit here in this spot. I think Kenny Dillingham, there was flirtation with Michigan, too. So all of that. Speaking of Michigan, Matt, number 18, Michigan taking on number 13, Texas in the Citrus Bowl, 3 p.m. on New Year's Eve on ABC. I actually lean a little bit towards Michigan. Obviously, and it's been a nightmare of a offseason. They're going to get Kyle Whittingham now to be their starter, to be their head coach. Easy for me to say. only a handful of opt-outs for Michigan. A lot of pieces missing for Texas in this game. Of the top 11 defensive players based off of snap count, this courtesy of my buddy Stuckey over at Action Network, 7 of them will be out, Matt. So they got a lot of pieces out on the defense there. They also fired Pete Kwiatkowski, which was a bit bizarre, as their defensive coordinator. They're bringing in Will Muschamp. Sure. I don't love it. It's not an official play. I think I might take a little Michigan plus a 7.5 here in the Citrus Bowl.
Yeah, I don't hate that play. We know Bip Pogge's taking over as a Michigan coach here, and he said last week, I don't know how many guys are going to show up. You know, we may be out 25 guys in this game. Well, there's been a lot of talk about that, but Texas, is like you said, is also going to be without a lot of guys here. So tough one for me. I might throw Texas on a money line parlay if I get to that point because, you know, I don't like Bryce Underwood. I think he's been a flop as a freshman quarterback for Michigan. It's interesting to me. I've talked about this throughout the season, and that's why I felt like the Michigan coaching staff left a lot to be desired. Bryce Underwood got no better from the first game of the season to the last. I don't know if he's going to play any better in this bowl game. He catches a break here because Texas is going to have so many key defensive players not in the game. But one thing that causes me pause betting on the Longhorns here is you remember a year ago when Michigan was shorthanded went down to Florida for the bowl game against Alabama. Everybody assumed Alabama was just going to roll. The Tide was going to roll over Michigan in that game. And the Tide got their ass kicked by Michigan in that game. So I'd say I'd probably lean with the Wolverines taking the points, if anything, here, because you just don't know if what Texas is going to show up with and if how much the Longhorns really care about winning this game.
I'll be on the sidelines, Matt, for Nebraska and Utah, 3:30 Eastern time on ESPN. Like I mentioned, you can listen to it on Bowl Season Radio, SiriusXM Channel 201, the Varsity Network app. Tune in as well. What a weird situation this is brewing up to be with Kyle Whittingham. This was supposed to be his swan song. Instead, he's gone. He is headed to Michigan. So Morgan Scally, the Morgan Scally era starts now as opposed to the start of next season, Matt. Utah's a massive favorite here. They should be a big favorite. I'm not going to bet the game, but any thoughts on Nebraska and Utah? TJ Latif is expected to be, per Matt Rule, a full go in this game. He got banged up in the season finale there for Nebraska.
Yeah, I've watched Latif play a few games. One game he played really well. The other two games he was terrible. So I don't know what the Cornhuskers are going to get there at the quarterback position. You would think Utah is going to be a motivated team here. And the Utes probably should roll. But, man, that's a big number, and I can't lay that big number like that. Hopefully you get to see a good game, Tim, on New Year's Eve.
I hope so.
The Cornhuskers were severely disappointing, and I think we'd be remiss not to talk about your Nebraska season win total. You swept the board on the win totals. But did you say you went 7-1 on the win totals, but the one loss was Nebraska? Is that right?
Yep. 7-1 on the podcast. The only loss, Nebraska, fell a half win short. As Matt, you reminded me, middle of the season, that is, I believe, 9 straight years Nebraska has gone under their win total. Yeah. So thank you for that reminder. That was much needed. But Matt Rule also looking for his first win over a ranked team as a head coach of the Nebraska Cornhuskers. So we'll see if that happens on New Year's Eve. I wanted to mention these two games real quickly, Matt, before we do our best bet recap. We've got Navy versus Cincinnati in the Liberty Bowl. We talked about this one early on in the bowl process. I think a number of you jumped on Navy at a much better number, maybe threw them in a money line parlay with Army, who won and covered easily against UConn. I believe the current stretch that armed service academies are on in bowl season is 19-3 against the spread, Matt. You know there's going to be no opt-outs. They're going to be motivated. Cincinnati's going to be without Soresby at quarterback, Corleone on the defensive line. Navy should roll in this game. I hate giving out a bad number, so I won't officially, but I would lay 7, maybe throw them in a money line parlay. Navy, you know they're showing up, Matt, so the service academies tend to be great bets in bowl game. So Navy will be fired up to be playing in that Liberty Bowl. Also, Cincinnati, worth noting, Matt, January 2nd, the day the portal opens. So who knows if any more Cincinnati players pop in the portal. And lastly, before we give our best bet recap, a bowl game that I know is near and dear to your heart, the Holiday Bowl, taking place at Snapdragon Stadium there in San Diego. Arizona around a 2.5-3-point favorite against SMU. Brent Brennan has done a really nice job in year two, turning things around there for Arizona. They had a really strong finish to the season there, Matt. And will they carry that over into a bowl game? I was looking it up. Brent Brennan at San Jose State went to 3 bowl games. He was a favorite in all 3, and they lost all 3 outright. Uh-huh. So he has not been a great bet in bowl season, but it would be Arizona or pass for me in this one, but I have not bet the Holiday Bowl as of yet.
Yeah, you're right. I have been to a few Holiday Bowls, but I'm not going to this one. I'm not going to bet this one. I don't have a good read on this matchup between those two. And technically, I guess there was one more bowl game I bet, because you were talking about Navy. And Army looked like such a good play, but I didn't want to lay the number. I did put Army on a money line parlay with Indiana and Georgia as well. So that one's not in yet. But like you said, Army and Navy looked like good bets. I think a lot of people jumped on both of those.
All right, Matt. That exercises or exhausts bowl season for now. Mm-hmm. We will, of course, have semifinals and a championship. So let's get to our best bet recap.
Best bets recap.
All right, Matt, lead us off with your best bets for this portion of bowl season.
All right, Tim, let's see. I believe I'm 49-34-3 for the season. Let's see. We're going to go with Indiana -7. I'm still waiting for the 6.5, so I have not bet this yet, but I will be on Indiana. If I have to lay the 7, so be it. Georgia -6.5. We're going to lay it with Kirby Smart against the Rebels. Moneyline parlay, Indiana -235, Georgia -235. Those are the current prices at Circa. If you moneyline parlay those, you get +103. So I'm going that way too. Miami, if I can't get the 10, I'll buy the half point if I have to, for reasons I explained earlier. Miami +10 at -125 against Ohio State, and Iowa +5.5, the Hawkeyes against Vandy in the ReliaQuest Bowl. Also pending, I have Oregon 8-1 to win the college football playoff. So there we go. That's, let's see, a total of 6 plays live right now. How about you?
Yep. Last week, 3-1. Doesn't count Hawaii and Army, two best bets that I gave out in the bowl betting guide over at vsin.com. And we talked about those. But official plays on the podcast went 3-1. One bad beat, one fortunate cover with San Diego State. So I think 3-1 was the right record there for last week's bet. 49-45-4 on the year. Iowa +5.5. Vandy, Iowa, first half under 23.5. I do like Miami if it gets to 10, but officially here on the podcast, we'll go first half under 20.5, and we'll lay 6.5 with Georgia. So there you go. Our best bets for New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. Matt, we'll be back next week in 2026 to talk about some semifinal games. But I will bid farewell to you, but people will still hear Matt's voice coming up in just a little bit when Wes Reynolds joins us from his appearance on VSiN Primetime. Matt, appreciate it as always, and best of luck with the bets.
All right, you bet. Have a winning weekend, and I'll see you in 2026. Actually, I'll see you tonight.
That's true. Yeah. Check us out on VSiN Primetime. All right, quick break. When we come back, Wes Reynolds, his appearance from VSiN Primetime, getting you ready for the Rose Bowl. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. We were unable to catch up with Wes Reynolds for good reason this week because he is in transit to Pasadena. We wanted to get this podcast out to you as soon as possible, but don't fret. We still talked to our good friend Wes Reynolds, got some best bets from him on VSiN Primetime Monday night. So here is that conversation with the one and only Wes Reynolds from VSiN Primetime. Let's take a little pause from the NFL and talk some college football, and let's head to our progressive guest line and welcome in a gentleman who will be wheels up to Pasadena for the Rose Bowl as his beloved Indiana Hoosiers taking on the Alabama Crimson Tide, the one and only Hoosier Wes. Wes Reynolds joins us right now. And Wes, as we look at the betting market, we're starting to see the market come in a little bit more on Indiana. You are a homer, but you are also realistic when it comes to your team. What do you make of this spot now that the 6.5s are all disappearing and it's pretty much 7s across the board in favor of Indiana against Alabama?
Yeah, Tim, it seems like a lot of the punditry likes Alabama, but a lot of the wise guys might like Indiana here because Alabama actually has gotten a lot of the early action from this number. But now to see 7, you know, that might be a mix of general public and some sharp guys. But a lot of the punditry have been saying, like, oh, I don't know about Indiana. It's like, you know, you thought Indiana might have answered the questions beating Ohio State in the Big Ten title game, but apparently not. But a lot of this analysis has been like, this is Alabama, like that this is the same Alabama that we usually see, and it's not. And Indiana is the better team, and they haven't gotten the benefit of the doubt at all. But maybe they're going to start to toward game time. Might have to do a little bit with the weather forecast as well, because unfortunately, it is going to rain on our parade in terms of the weather. We are getting rain in Pasadena. That's not good for Alabama, who can't run the ball to begin with. So I think that that might at least favor Indiana somewhat.
Wes, when do you head to Pasadena? And how much do you think this weather might matter? I was going to ask you that, too, because I see rain in the forecast. Is it going to be windy? Is it just heavy rain? And how might that impact the game? Because I agree, Alabama's ground game has been nearly non-existent in a lot of these games. And I like the Hoosiers anyway, but I think that's a reason to like them more.
Yeah, I leave tomorrow, but did check the forecast for Thursday for the Rose Parade and then, of course, for the Rose Bowl game. And it is supposed to rain relatively consistently. I don't know how hard it's going to be, but I think if it's kind of nastier conditions, that's better for Indiana because Indiana has played in those conditions. It did rain in Autzen, even though they tell us it never does. It did rain in Autzen. They also tell us it never rains in Southern California, but we know that is now a lie because it is going to rain on Thursday. I think it's going to help Indiana from a running game standpoint. Keep in mind, this was a top 10 rushing offense in the country. Now, against the better teams, they didn't run it great, like per carry against Oregon or per carry against Ohio State. I think they were in the low threes, and against Iowa, they were at like 2.7, but they ran it well enough. And even with Overton back on the defensive line for Alabama, I think Indiana can run the ball at least a little bit. I don't think Alabama can run the ball at all. They certainly haven't proven to be able to do so all season.
All right, you just talked about Indiana's win at Oregon. How about the Ducks? The market has moved up here. Ducks 2.5-point favorites against Texas Tech in Miami on New Year's Day. How do you see that one?
It's a coin flip. I haven't decided what I'm going to do at the side, if anything. I did play a little bit on the total at 52.5, just because I'm going to trust these two defenses. Early game, by the way, in the Orange Bowl, so maybe perhaps a slow start for both of these teams, but Texas Tech is number one in the country in rush defense, 68.5 per game. So nobody has been able to run on them. And they've faced some pretty good rushing attacks as well. And then you've got Texas Tech third in total defense, Oregon 7 in total defense. And I think Dan Lanning at least is going to get after his guys on that side of the ball based on how they played in the second half against James Madison. I know the game was over essentially, but they got kind of sloppy, I think, a little bit on defense. And credit the Dukes, you know, they signed up for 60 and, you know, fought till the bitter end. But I think that's going to get the Oregon defense's attention. Both teams very good up front, especially on the defensive line. I think we get a low scoring game in Miami.
Well, speaking of low scoring, the lowest total of the four quarterfinals by far is Miami, Ohio State. This game will take place New Year's Eve at the Cotton Bowl. And depending on what number you want to bet, you can get a 41.5 out there at FanDuel. 41, we'll call the consensus. 9.5, there was a 10 for a moment. How do you look at the first of the four quarterfinals, Miami and Ohio State, Wes?
Yeah, I think we want to see, Tim, how the Ohio State offensive line is going to play, because they were good all season. But then when you went up against Indiana, which was the best defensive line that they had faced, they didn't really do much up front. Indiana had 9 tackles for loss, 87 rushing yards for the Buckeyes, and then the pressure rate. And that's what's a big concern against Miami. Ohio State's pressure rate, I think, was like 25.8%, top 10. They allowed almost 50%. They were right at under 49% in terms of pressure rate, which is percentage of dropbacks where the quarterback is either sacked or under duress or hit. And the Hoosiers got to Julian Sayin in that game. So I need to, you know, we're going to see if the offensive line is going to be better. It is Ryan Day calling plays now. I think 9.5, I'm waiting on the 10. I don't know if we're going to get it, but I kind of lean Miami. I think this could be a defensive struggle, really, for both of these teams. I'm not sure how much Miami is going to be able to run on Ohio State as well. So that's going to force Carson Beck to have to make plays. And they kind of babied Carson Beck a little bit, I thought, in that Texas A&M game. They did not let him decide it. They let Malachi Toney and Mark Fletcher decide it, which is probably usually a good idea. So would lean a little bit the U here.
The finale of the four quarterfinals, maybe after your old, wearing a Rose Bowl champion hat there at Pasadena, you'll be sitting down to watch Ole Miss take on Georgia, the only one of the four West that we've had before, as Georgia beat them 43-35 earlier this season. Highest total of the four sitting at 55.5. Georgia underneath a touchdown sitting at a 6.5-point favorite in this spot.
Yeah, it seems like we hadn't seen a lot of movement here, which kind of concerns me as somebody that likes the Georgia side, but I don't want to overread it necessarily. I'm just going with the team that I think played better down the stretch. And you know, they did dominate Ole Miss in the fourth quarter, ended up winning and also covering late. But if you look at what Georgia did late in the season, the last four games, and those last four opponents, by the way, were Texas, Charlotte, Georgia Tech, and Alabama. So three of four very quality opponents. Those teams went 10 for 48 on third down, just about 21%. Georgia forced five turnovers, had nine sacks in those four games, and they haven't given up over 80 yards in the last four games on the ground. So we talked about it, Tim, on the College Football Betting Podcast, kind of a theme throughout the year. It's like, yeah, they're kind of good, but they're not like as good as they were. Like, they're not dominant up front, really, in terms of both their lines. But they looked every bit of dominant down the stretch, and I think that that's why – they're the really scary team here. They didn't give up many sacks. They were fifth in the SEC in rushing. So I don't know how Ole Miss is going to meet that physicality at the line of scrimmage. And so much of an emotion dump, too, at least winning that first playoff game since Lane Kiffin bailed on him. They're going to try hard and obviously be motivated and ready to play here. But I just think Georgia has too much for them up front.
The Wizard, Wes Reynolds with us. Wes, I got a feeling you and I are going to be on the same side here, too, with Iowa, a 5.5-point dog against Vandy. And then the final 2 minutes, quick takes on Michigan, Texas, and Nebraska, Utah.
Yeah, Iowa. I took Iowa at 5.5. I think Kirk Ferentz and Phil Parker are like chomping at the bit to get at Diego Pavia. It's like, okay, let's see how you do against our defense, which, oh, by the way, was one of the best in the country. So I don't see Vanderbilt just, you know, chucking and ducking all over the field on these guys. So I like the Hawkeyes perhaps outright. I did take the dog with Michigan at 7.5. I think that they're still going to be motivated here. Looks like a bulk of the players, the portal hadn't opened until the second, but that they're going to be back. I think they're going to play hard for Biff Poggi. They did, of course, hire Kyle Whittingham. So a lot more positive vibes and positive waves around that Michigan program that we saw. We didn't see about 10 or 14 days ago. And then I laid it with Utah. It has come back down from 16 to 14. I laid 14. I think that they play hard for Coach Witt here. I think, you know, and he essentially kind of got somewhat nudged out. I don't, you know, we'll find out the real story down the line, but it seemed like he did. I think Utah is going to run over Nebraska in the Las Vegas Bowl. So I laid the two touchdowns.
He's Wes Reynolds. You can catch him every week on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. And always appreciate it, Wes, and enjoy the Rose Bowl.
You bet, guys. Thanks for having me.
And thanks again to Wes Reynolds joining us courtesy of VSiN Primetime, and hopefully enjoys himself out there in Pasadena. He will be back next week as we get you ready for the semifinals. And we will be back in 2026. Only three more college football games to preview for you come next week. But hopefully we got some winners in the bag this week. Enjoy the games. Thanks to everyone who has been part of this broadcast. Matt Eumanns, Wes Reynolds, Wyatt Tomchek, Ryan Hunter, Rob stepping in, helping us out as well from a production standpoint. As a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. We will see all in 2026. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.